In the Christian church, we celebrate Mother's Day as the festival of the Christian home. And the scripture readings for today, particularly from the gospel and from the epistle, highlight love and what it is to live in love, and what an appropriate thing to think about and to talk about as we celebrate our homes, the homes that we came from, the homes that we live in, places that hopefully are the places we learned to live in love. Hopefully are those places where we first learned what it meant to abide in love, to live surrounded in love, the way a branch might live so completely connected to the greater vine that it draws all of its strength, all of its nourishment, everything it needs to survive and be supported and thrive and grow and flourish from that common vine. Our homes, hopefully the places where we learned that we had that support, that love, that nurture, that nourishment, so that we too could not just survive, but thrive and flourish and grow. And from the love we received from our parents and grandparents and siblings, perhaps receive that first taste of what it is to be loved unconditionally, to abide in a love that is even greater than the love of our families, the love of our communities, the love of God. Hopefully, that's what home has been for us and is for us. But we know that for too many people, that's not what home is or has been or could be. For some, home is a place of abuse or neglect. And for far too many people around the world, home is a place of poverty, such extreme poverty that even though abundant love, unconditional love is there, the opportunity to thrive and to flourish is just not present. And the vast majority of people who live in poverty are women and children. And on this Mother's Day, I can't help but think about the huge disparity between the not just the love that I received, but the abundant opportunity and blessing that I received in my home growing up and that I seek to provide to my daughter as she grows up, compared with that of 600 million girls in the developing world. The girl effect, we saw one of their videos a little bit earlier, and this one just now from the Nike Foundation is a co-sponsor of the girl effect as well. The girl effect has this idea, it's a program with the idea that to help young girls is to help the whole human body, the whole human community, the whole human family. That if we can transform the circumstances around a young girl's life, can give her an opportunity, that she transforms not only herself, but her family, her immediate community, her larger community, her country, and eventually, in fact, the world. You saw one of the statistics that when a young woman or a girl earns money, she reinvests 90% of it in her own family or in her immediate community, compared with 30 or 40% when a male earns money in the same conditions. We know that young women face incredible odds all around the world. We know that the number one cause of death for young women, for girls really, ages 15 to 19, the number one cause of death worldwide are complications arising from pregnancy and childbirth. And that women under the age of 14 or 15 are something like 5 or 6 times more likely to die in childbirth or in pregnancy-related health issues. Women under 18 or 19 are twice as likely to die in childbirth compared with women who are 20 or older. And yet we know that in many parts of the world, most women marry and are mothers by 15, 18. When I went to Ecuador and I met my host mom, a wonderful woman and mother of 9. And I had to calculate back when I finally figured out how old she was and translated the Spanish to figure out what her age was. And I had to calculate back her oldest daughter's age and realize that she was a mother by the time she turned 15. And her two oldest daughters were also mothers by the time they each turned 15, not because she doesn't love them. She overflows with love for them, not because she doesn't want them to have education and opportunity, but because those opportunities are not afforded to her. And she cannot provide them for her children. And they will not be able to provide them for their children unless something changes. Again, it's not that we lack for love or concern or compassion, but we wonder, how can we possibly help someone so far away? How can we possibly extend aid so that another human being has the opportunity to abide not only in God's love, but in the abundant opportunity that we have had? You see, for us, when we talk about abiding in God's love, we might think that that's kind of like a perk or the icing on the cake, or like, you know, that's the spiritual aspect, because all of the rest of our lives are kind of taken care of or something. But for many people, for many young women, to abide in God's love, let alone to receive a piece of that from someone else, but to be able to have a sense that there is someone, something that she's connected to, that will love and support and nurture her, that may be the only place that she draws that love and support and that nurture. That may be the only abundance she knows is the abundance of God's love and God's grace. And how can we say that we have truly loved God, that we have truly grasped and understood what it is to be loved by God, unless we turn around and we share that love with someone else? So how do we do that? We're stuck here in Montpelier, and this poor girl is who knows where, in Bolivia, in Sierra Leone, somewhere around the world, just hoping for a chance. One of my favorite ways, aside from the United Methodist Church, which is the number one way to assure that 100 pennies of your dollar get to a woman in need, or anyone in need, but one of my other favorite ways of assisting someone across the world is through a process called microloaning. We saw a little bit about what that is, and it's a pretty simple idea with a pretty huge impact. And that is that you can go to your computer and you can go to a place that does microloaning. I like kiva.org. It's pretty simple, kiva.org. They take donations as small as $25. In fact, they kind of encourage that. And you would find a profile of an entrepreneur. Most of them women, a lot of them women. You'd find a profile of someone who needs maybe $400 or $500, maybe as much as $1,000, but that's pretty rare. Probably $300, $400, $500 to buy a few animals for their herd, to buy materials for their soap making business, to purchase some textiles so that they can continue their clothing manufacturing, or some clay for their pottery business, or whatever it is, to buy a car so that they can increase their delivery radius. And then you, combined with others around the world, pitch in a little bit via the website. Pitch in and contribute, and when the full amount is raised, then that person is loaned that money, not by some huge, big-name international bank that's going to pay their CEOs $1 billion anyway and then charge exorbitant interest and not help out the person on the ground. The money is transferred from the microloan that you bought to a local lender in that person's community, a lender that has agreed to lend at a very low rate, or if at all, and the money is given to the entrepreneur or the struggling person who is looking for some capital. And then folks are encouraged to pay it back. And the clip we saw was about a specific project where 99% is repaid. Globally, with microloaning, about 97%, still incredibly high, is repaid. Not because people want to be mean or extract a profit or anything like that, but because it gives the borrower a sense of ownership. I didn't do this on somebody else's charity. I borrowed money and I repaid it. Dignity, like the woman said in the clip, a sense of personal dignity. I did this. I was able to do this. And then the money gets paid back. It goes back into the accounts of the people who bought the microloans. And you could withdraw it, put it back into your checking account or whatever, or reinvest it in another person, another entrepreneur. Now, what I'd like to suggest is that we take this opportunity and we try to do something like this as a church. Because while I might have $25 or $30 to help out somebody, put together we have a whole lot more. And we can help a whole lot of somebodies and help them with an opportunity that they may not have had. And so what I'm going to suggest to you, you should have received when you came in a blank envelope. And if you didn't, they're probably in the back and you can get one on the way out. And I'm going to suggest that you think of a woman in your life. Maybe your mother. Maybe your grandmother. Maybe an aunt or a sister or a friend. But someone who showed you opportunity, who taught you what it was to be loved and nurtured, who provided for you the nourishment that you needed to grow, and in so doing, taught you what God's love and God's nourishment and God's abundance is like. And I know that I can never begin to repay my mom for all the opportunity and all the love that she gave me, and I try to give the same to my daughter. But in honor of my mom, in honor of yours, the women in your life who have nurtured you, I would invite us to give, and then our mission team, we do have one, and we're forming, and this will give us something to do that's a very simple thing. We'll gather our mission team together, and we will purchase a microloan or more in the name of Trinity United Methodist Church in honor of the women and mentors in our lives to give other women, other young girls, a chance in another part of the world. We know what it is to abide in love and abundance and promise. And even if we've had to struggle to find that and to come to that place in our lives, we have a sense of what that blessing is and what that abundance can be. And so I believe that one of the best ways that we live out the love we've been given, that we live out God's love in us, the knowledge that we've received God's love, is that we, in turn, share that love with others. If we say we love God, and we have hatred, or callousness, or pity for our sisters and brothers in the human family, then we haven't gotten it yet. That's what Paul says. If we say we abide in God's care and are part of the vine, but we bear no fruit, and we share none of that abundance with others, then we haven't quite figured it out yet. We have an opportunity that research suggests transforms not just one person, but gives her the means to transform her society, her family, her community, the whole world. That's what abundance is about. That's what God's love is about, poured out into us with such abundance we can't even imagine, that we in turn may be a blessing to others.